revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Promoting peace, liberty, and prosperity around the clock. LibertyTalk.fm.
Welcome to Living the Solution with Dr. Elena George. Today we have a friend of the show returning, Miss Lynn Taylor, the Common Core Diva. And last time you were on, Lynn, we talked about the education system. And there's an article that came out that I want to eventually, as we move along in the show, talk about. But the education, Department of Education, is a lot of things going on, which I think having you back is going to give us some context about what we need to pay attention to. So okay. One, I hope you're doing well. Mm-hmm. And happy Thanksgiving and belated.
Well, happy belated Thanksgiving, or, you know, we can extend the party to whatever we need to.
Exactly. So let's get rolling with the Congress and the House Committee on Education and Workforce. What's going on there right now?
Everything, including the kitchen sink, is the nicest answer that I can give you. And by that, I mean this particular committee. First of all, we should not have this committee. It's unconstitutional because we were never supposed to have a federal footprint over labor, or were we supposed to have a federal footprint over education. So anything that they do, especially when they pass it off as, oh, we're affecting the states, is just one more justification to cover someone else's backside as to, okay, the federal government is messing where the federal government should not be. And you have right now, you have a very, how shall I put this? You have a representative who is the chair who is trying to wax elegant about some of the things that are going on right now that are really suspect, and we can get into what I mean by that. But yeah, as far as the state's economy, again, that was never supposed to be under federal jurisdiction. So with the amount of hearings that are going on right now and the Committee on Education and Workforce, we are looking at anything from parental rights to Truman scholarships to workforce and pensions and all kinds of things. And again, we don't elect these people to do unconstitutional things, yet daily they do it and daily we allow it.
Now, I had no idea it's such a breadth of topics, pensions. How does that even come into education?
Well, because it ties to labor.
I see.
And don't you know that in every other country except America, education and labor are somewhat merged? And if you'll remember back during the, I think it was the Trump administration, the first go round, he and Betsy DeVos trotted down to Argentina to meet with the group of 20. And what was the topic? But merging education to labor. And so one of the things that has been a burr in my backside was I knew they were never going to shut down the Department of Education, not in the prudent way. You would have had to have repealed the laws first, then cut the funding, and then slowly cut the department out. But what has happened, and this is one of the things that the chair for the House Committee on Education and Workforce has done, has gotten out there on TV before God and everyone going, oh, this is the right way to do it. This is the right way to shut down the Department of Education. And the thing that I've been warning about on your show, as well as other shows, is that if you did it the wrong way, it wasn't going to solve the problem. And that's exactly what has happened.
So we're sounds like we're in somewhat of a limbo, that if you don't shut it down correctly, then everything, it's like a house of cards, it sounds like.
Right. Well, it's kind of like, you know, if you live anywhere where you have rodents or bugs, you know as well as I do, when you close the door and you come back in and you turn the light on, you watch whatever it is run or crawl away from you. Well, that's exactly what's happened. And this is, you know, one thing that I kept saying was, look, if you don't do this properly, it's going to scatter. And that's precisely what the shuck and jive is right now is, oh, well, you've got the House, you've got the entire administration going, oh, yes, we're shutting down the Department of Education. But look, oh, we made all these partnerships with other unconstitutional federal agencies, and they're going to take this little bit, and they're going to take this little bit, and they're going to take this little bit. And before you know it, you can never right the wrongs that have been done, because now, instead of it being in one central location like it was, it's now going to be pretty much under new jurisdiction, so to speak, but it's going to be harder to eradicate.
So the question, I guess, that rises is, if it goes to the states, or are we still seeing a federal control, but it's just in different federal agencies? Or do the states really run anything?
No, the states don't run anything. And if they do, they're smoking dope, I'm sorry to say. The reason why I say that is because if you listen to some of the hearings, if you listen to some of the interviews, not only from the chairman of this particular committee, but if you listen to anyone on the supposed other side, or if you listen to the Secretary of Education right now, unequivocally, you will hear out of their mouth, we are not stopping the federal funding. We're only dialing back, supposedly, the way in which it works. No, they're not. They're getting very, very particular with, okay, we're not going to do, we can't do it from the Department of Education so much anymore, because people will see us. It's like, you know, our underwear's down and you'll see our backside. But, oh, if we just take, for example, if we just take all the career-focused education tracks and we throw them over here in labor, oh, well, it's now in labor. So it's not an education program. Now it's a labor problem. So we have to have that skilled workforce. This is what we've been talking about. I don't know how many times, Dr. Elena, on your show and on other ones, that this was the demise. This was why we were seeing the shift away from academics and critical thinking to skill-based education.
So it sounds like it's just picked up where kind of No Child Left was. It wasn't about education, right? It's about...
Right.
Indoctrination and all sorts of other things. Now it's become harder to see. Mm-hmm. And it's now funded in a way that nobody can complain about where my money's going.
Right. And so one of the things that happened was, you have these headlines that are out there that are going, oh, well, the Trump administration has now said that, well, nursing is unprofessional. It can't be recognized. And one of the things that you need to understand is, first of all, the president should not be weighing in on education. Absolutely not. But when you look at the fine print, he didn't say that nursing was unprofessional. The Department of Education came in and said it, and then pointed the finger back to the administration. So we have the same old finger pointing going on with he said, she said.
And everybody's divide and conquer, and mm-hmm. it's going through as we all,
Yeah, and because you have a supposedly Republican-led administration, they're going over, oh, it's all the Democrats' fault. And, you know, if you listen to one of the recent interviews that Representative Wahlberg gave to Fox News, I think it was, he was sitting there going, oh, well, you know, our enemies across the aisle, so to speak, is what he was saying. Well, they're calling what we're doing illegal. Well, you know what? The Democrats on this one are right. It is an illegal move. But it shouldn't be just because the Democrats said so. It should be because the people finally have understood this kind of activity is unconstitutional.
Well, is there anything? Well, I mean, what do the states have to gain from this? Can they weigh in? If it's not going to cost them. It doesn't sound like it's going to cost them anything. They're just bystanders in this.
Well, they can weigh in, Dr. Elena, but what good is it going to do when you have a federal government that is still holding you hostage with the money or the technical assistance or the federal guidance on technology?
It's a big pot. Everything is just thrown in, but there's no thought to it, really.
Well, there's thought. It's calculated thought is what it is. And
I mean about educating children. I mean, sorry.
Oh, I see. Okay. Yeah, well, it's all been a calculated move for control. Absolutely, it is. And then when you see some of the things that are going on, you know, supposedly by closing down the Department of Education, for example, oh, the states can give you universal school choice. Well, mm-hmm. let's dissect that for just a moment.
Yeah, what is that?
Anytime you use certain words from a government perspective, it means so much more than the word would mean on its own. For example, universal. Well, when we hear that, we're thinking, oh, well, a state says, oh, I can have universal choice. That means that I can get federal money in my state and I can use it for whatever citizen wants to use it in a universal fashion so they can have the choice of where their child goes to school. No. That's what it looks like. That's what it smells like. That's what it sounds like. But what is it really? When the federal government uses the word universal, or any representative of the government uses a word like universal, they mean every single child, whether they're in public school, parochial school, homeschool, hybrid school, higher education, lower education, doesn't matter. Now, what happens is, it's giving the illusion that somehow the education that you would get using these supposed school choice funds that come with this universal school choice are going to give your student a leg up. I mean, that's what we all want, isn't it? Mm-hmm. We mm-hmm. want our child to do better than we did, or we want our child to do better than the child down the street. When you have an education system that is so married to boosting its job workforce and its economy, they could give a fig about what type of education your child gets. So it doesn't matter. And why I say that is because the mandates that were in the Every Student Succeeds Act that we're still under, and that is all education must be aligned to the same post-secondary readiness standards as laid out by the Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Act. You have heard me say this many, many times on this show, and that mandate still goes. The credentialing for your teachers to teach to post-secondary readiness as laid out by the Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Act is also in there. And on the chopping block of what's considered professional are teaching degrees. So this goes way beyond just nursing. This goes into a myriad of degrees. So look at the bigger picture. Don't look at what they want you to look at in the headlines. Look at what they're not saying.
From the standpoint of the parent, this is so opaque that you're saying that it hasn't passed, right? This is what they're looking to do, universal choice, right? They haven't yet reached that achievement. But that means if you homeschool your child, like you said in the past, you're in the same boat as somebody mm-hmm. sending their kid to private school or public school, correct?
Right. Yeah, you're going to have strings with that school choice money. Because again, the school choice funding is a fallacy. It is deferred. Let's say it's redistributed wealth for one thing because people go, oh no, but it's my tax money. No. Honey, it stops being your money when it leaves your wallet or it leaves your paycheck. It then goes into the federal funding. They give the illusion that somehow when that funding that you paid into suddenly crosses the state line, it magically becomes state funds. No, it doesn't. And your tax money no longer is yours to do with what you want. If you wanted true school choice, you shouldn't have had to pay any tax at all for education and kept the money and done what you wanted to do to educate your child. That would have been the way to do it, but that's not how it happened. So when you have the federal funding that comes back to you in the form of a voucher or a tax credit or a scholarship, so to speak, for school choice, that money comes with those mandates and all those other things that you were never warned about. Take Arizona, for example. They were a poster child for, oh, yes, we're going to have school choice. Well, they got preloaded debit cards. Told you in the sales pitch, you can go and use this for anything you need to bolster and supplement Johnny and Susie's education. And parents started to do that. It was only after the fact that the state came back and said, oh, I'm sorry, you didn't use the pre-approved vendor list. Oh, wait a minute. You didn't know we had a pre-approved vendor list for curriculum? Oh, silly us. But guess what? You need to pay us that money back. Does that sound like freedom? Does that sound like choice? Does that sound like I'm giving my child a leg up? And let's not talk about the people who have abused the school choice money and said, oh, yes, you know what? I need to be able to drive Johnny and Susie to school, so I'm going to go buy a car with this school choice money. People have done it. They abuse the system. Every time there's been a government handout, I don't care if it's with food stamps, I don't care if it's with Medicaid or whatever, people have found ways to manipulate the system and profit. Now, if we did that as a citizen, Dr. Elena, we would be charged with felonies and put under the jail. But our government does it and calls it taxation and no charges.
This is the same playbook, pay to play. I can imagine these vendors, who they're related to, who they know, or what contributions they've made to whatever political persuasion. So the money's still circulating in this, preferred system, and it always works against the individual.
It doesn't. That doesn't even tap the part about the data tracking that is assigned to this school choice money, because they will know exactly where Johnny and Susie are going, what they're doing, where you're spending the money. I mean, come on, it's on a preloaded debit card. Don't you think the state's going to trace? Of course they are. That's how they find out. So you might as well put a data bullet tracker on the back of your child the minute you take school choice money in whatever form that it's offered in. And this universal, guys, is a fancy buzzword, so you'll think that, oh, my state's going to be better than your state. Why do we have to put the states in competition with each other? But this is not the first time we've seen our federal government do this when it comes to education funding, Dr. Elena. I've seen it happen since I started researching education. They make these competitive grants, and they pit one state against another so that somehow, oh, well, this state will be the finest for blah, blah. But I'm sorry, you other state, you missed out. So, oh, well, too bad.
So it comes down to, again, those states who are falling in line probably get a majority of the monies. And those that are hardcore, whatever, are against them, end up getting punished. I mean, the whole system is completely, it's corrupt. On that note, let's take our first break. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living the Solution. We're speaking with Ms. Lynn Taylor. And Lynn is giving us a primer once again on how this sounds good. It's always the opposite of when they write these bills. And the name is just think of the opposite of what it's supposed to accomplish. So I can foresee universal education and the same thing as universal health care, where it's unaffordable. Mm-hmm. There's no choice. You end up with the lowest common denominator of care. And in this case, the lowest common denominator of education. And, this is interesting because when they talk about the economy and how they're going to be losing all these jobs to AI, what are they educating people for? If people are going into these silos to, be made into workers, well, what's the job going to be? They've already said there's going to be a problem with that.
Well, and you bring up a valid point. And here's the thing. They're going to sit here and give you a sales pitch of, oh, well, we're educating for jobs that don't exist. I'm sorry. How do you do? You cannot do there's no way to do that. When you educate a person, you are supposed to teach them how to think, how to read, how to write, how to do math, not train for a job that doesn't yet exist. And think about it. Think about all the years that people were educated in the ways I just said, how to read, how to think, how to write, how to do math. They were able to handle jobs that had not been in creation yet, because they had the basic framework to go to any employer, and the employer took it upon themselves at that point to go, okay, you've got a basic understanding. Here's where we're going to augment that. But that's not what happens now. What is happening now is that because there's been such a collusion between corporate America and the education system, the corporate world is expecting by the time Johnny and Susie graduate kindergarten or whatever other institution you want, they're supposed to be somehow ready to handle what that employer wants. Well, that's sometimes impossible because, you know, you might think you know what the employer wants, but do you really? Not till you get into that particular job are you going to know all the ins and outs and ups and downs. And I can tell you, the days of us graduating, say, high school and going, not sure what I want to do, those are gone. Because if you don't know what you want to do by the time you're in middle school, too bad. You got to take a test that will tell you what you're going to do. And if you think I'm making it up, go to any school. I dare you, go to any school and ask to see some of the tests that these children take that pigeonhole them into careers. But I want to get back to the thing about, oh yes, Trump said that nurses were, you know, unprofessional. This is from the Department of Education. This is a press release that was released on November the 24th. And it's titled Myth versus Fact, the Definition of Professional Degrees. Now, here we go. First sentence, my dear. President Trump's One Big Beautiful Bill Act placed common sense limits on federal student loans for graduate degrees. These loan limits will help drive down the cost of graduate programs and reduce debt that students have to take out. Graduate students received more than half of all new federal student loans in recent years. And now these loans make up half the outstanding $1.7 trillion in federal student loans. Now, it goes on to tell you that under the Big Beautiful Bill Act, it's required to, the Department of Education is required to identify what professional degree programs are so that they can meet these new spending limits. And that's where it goes into, okay, well, this is where we're going to split hairs. And if, you know, you have one kind of degree, well, here's your limit. If you have another kind of degree, here's your limit. Well, the reason why college is so unaffordable is because the federal government got into the student loan business. If you dial it back just probably 20, 25 years ago, we did not have the federal government handing out student loans. You had private companies that were competing to help students get to college. That's called free enterprise. What we have now is tyrannical control. But, oh yeah, we have to rein in the degree. So the press release goes on to tell you, here's the myth. The Trump administration does not view nurses as professionals because they are not classified as professional degree. Supposedly, here's the fact. The definition of a professional degree is an internal definition used by the Department of Education to distinguish among programs that qualify for higher loan limits, not a value judgment about the importance of the programs. Now, hang on just about two shakes of a second. You're going to say, oh, well, that really clears things up. First of all, an unconstitutional department is telling me what is a fact based on stuff they use. Do you see how hypocritical that is?
Yeah, it's kind of arbitrary.
It is absolutely arbitrary. Okay, let's move on because, oh, yes, there's even more. All right, if you go, since this is blaming the One Big Beautiful Bill Act, let's go over, if I could get my mouse to work, to get to my, okay, let's go look. Under the Federal Student Aid's website, this was updated on November the 14th, 2025, the One Big Beautiful Bill Act updates. goes on to tell you it was signed on July 4th, blah, 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 into law, blah, 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 blah. It's going to result in changes to the federal student aid program, and goes on to tell you, oh, we have recent updates. Because now when students and parents fill out the 2026-27 FAFSA, or the free application for student aid, federal student aid, oh, it now better reflects the family's financial need. Why? Because they're data tracking you nine ways to Sunday. Okay, it goes on to tell you, here are the changes that we're going to make, all to factor into an income-based repayment plan. Ooh, now here's where the rubber hits the road. Oh, yeah, you can have that higher limit, but guess what? You're going to have to pay it back based on your income. Then it goes on to tell you, here are the borrowers who will be expected to access this. Then there's going to be, oh, how do I become eligible for this income-based repayment program? What steps are the Department of Education going to take? Well, now this is all laboring under the assumption that the Department of Education is going to continue to exist. Ah, but guess what? One of the new partnerships, and let's look at that. Oh, let's see. Yes. Oh, the Department of Education, this is dated the 18th of November. The U.S. Department of Education announces six new agency partnerships to break up federal bureaucracy. BS and horse hockey. It is not breaking up federal bureaucracy. It is moving it. Now it goes, the headline tells you, Departments of Labor, Interior, Health, Human Services, and the state. So nowhere in there do you see the Treasury Department, do you? Because that's where student loans will land. Once they finally continue to splinter education, that is where every bit of the student loan, the student debt, and the whole racket to pay for higher education, be it trade school or college, is going to land. Now, is the Treasury Department constitutional? How about the IRS? Are they constitutional? These are questions you should be asking, because don't think that all those recent changes that have been made since Every Student Succeeds Act came into being, all those changes that the IRS has made that impact education, those were not for naught. Those were setting up the framework so that when this little thing gets split up, there's the framework already in place.
So I have a question, I guess a reverse question to this. Okay. You said it initially before that part of the reason that the education costs have gone up is because the government has been subsidizing through these loans. Yes. If people decide not to take them because they're onerous, and you have to have someone in sitting in these seats, if they decide not to spend the money and do something else, is there going to be, or could there be, a pressure, a downward pressure on having things become more affordable because people are not going to want to play this game, this casino? Is that possible?
It is absolutely possible. I would love to see it happen, but here's what I'm afraid is going to happen, is that we're going to see a continuing winnowing of who is deemed necessary and who is not, to the point of, you know, you're that useful widget idiot that Rockefeller said he wanted the nation full of. Remember? Mm-hmm. He said he didn't want a nation of thinkers. He wanted a nation of workers. And that's precisely what we're doing. So my point is, Dr. Elena, I think if enough people did that in a revolt, it would send a clear message, but you would have to have an awful lot of people want to do that, because the government is going to find some person out there. Well, if Elena won't do it and Lynn won't do it, well, you know what? Hey, we got these people over here. Bet they'll do it, because someone's always looking for a hand out.
And there's nothing free, Lynn, as we both know.
Oh, no, absolutely, absolutely not. But let's sit here and let's go over just a little bit about what these new partnerships are. And again, this is all BS too, because no, these are not new partnerships. The unity between the Department of Education and Labor and Health and Human Services got a huge boost with the Every Student Succeeds Act. And let me tell you, it wasn't in that order. You would think, okay, well, every student succeeds that. This is an education law. Oh, Department of Education is going to get the biggest power increase. No, they got the least powerful increase in what happened from a federal standpoint. The agency that got the most was Health and Human Services, then labor, then education. Now, you're going to sit here and go, wait a minute. She said interior. Why is interior in there? Well, that would cover the Native American education because all their education bureaucracy goes through the Department of Interior as well as the Department of Education, Labor, Health, and Human Services. Why is the state involved? Oh, because don't you know we have higher education that goes outside of America, and then we have people who come from other countries into America. So that involves the state. Well, guess what? When you throw in the state, you throw in all the international partnerships, including the United Nations. Oh, what could go wrong with that?
Listen, let's take a break because we need to digest exactly what you just said and come back. So let's take our second break. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living Solution. We're speaking with Ms. Lynn Taylor, and you can go to her website, commoncorediva.com, and there you can find other shows that guested on and read anything that she's written. So Lynn, before the break, you were giving us they've thought about this in a way that's to disarm people so they don't know what's going to happen or what's happening. The whole country, everybody is going to be affected by this. It just seems to me that it's going to go to the lowest common denominator. So there'll be just the workers, people, you know, used to further society and everybody who's benefiting from it. So it's going to be a two-tier system from what you're describing.
Well, yeah. I mean, and, you know, we've talked about this before. And before the break, we were talking about with the involvement of the State Department. Well, they've been in education longer than they should have been. So has the Department of Justice. I mean, you've got 13 different agencies that have no business partnering with education. Yet here we are seeing an administration that's glorifying the partnerships between unconstitutional agencies to prop up their supposed agenda. This is a shell game. Now, one of the reasons why people are saying, oh, well, Trump said that, you know, nurses are not important is because it's been reported. This is from CBS News on November 25th. Trump administration plan to exclude nursing from professional degrees sparks outcry. Says here, there's a proposal from the Trump administration that would exclude nursing from a list of professional degrees, a move that has drawn outcry from nursing advocates who warn it could worsen the nation's nursing shortage by limiting how much students can borrow for their training. It goes on to tell you, yes, this connects back to the One Big Beautiful Bill. Now, we already read just a little bit from the One Big Beautiful Bill from the student loan aspect. One of the things that is happening with this One Big Beautiful Bill that will come into play when it comes into not only degrees, but student loans, which we've, you know, talked about just a little bit earlier. Now, effective July the 1st, this is part of the One Big Beautiful Bill Act. The law creates a new accountability measure for all Title VI eligible programs, requiring that most students earn more than they would have had they not attended the program. Otherwise, the program will risk losing loan eligibility. Accountability measures. What does that mean? More testing for more data tracking. That's what the accountability means. That's also going to factor into your states. More data mining. Why do you think we're going to need more data centers? Because all this data has to go somewhere. And that's something that we'll end up on. Now, it goes on to tell you for undergrads, here's how things are going to work. Then it's going to talk about for grads.
students how things are going to work. And they're targeting specific age groups with this, Dr. Elena. So if you'll think back to one of our shows we did a couple of years ago where we talked about the way that the government was targeting certain age groups of where they would be and what they would do, this plays right into it. But here's a more complete list of the degrees that will be affected by this particular One Big Beautiful Bill. Education, including teaching master's degrees, nursing, MSN and DNPs, social work, MSWs and DSWs, public health, MPH and Dr. PH, physician assistants, occupational therapy, physical therapy, audiology, speech language pathology, a business master's, an engineering master's, counseling and therapy degrees. These are jobs that are going to be absolutely obsolete thanks to AI, but that doesn't mean those are the only degrees that would be affected. Because if you'll think back, the former leader of the IBM Corporation, the same IBM Corporation that signed on to the Common Core State Standards is a good thing for America's economy, was the same IBM that helped the Nazis in their data computations of who would be in concentration camps and who wouldn't. Same IBM that has helped spur apartheid in South Africa. This is the same group that is sitting here telling you, oh, yes, there are 22 other professions in which we're going to winnow away. And where are they going? To AI.
So this seems like the ground level to removing people from the workforce. I mean, they're saying there's not going to be enough jobs for people. So you're literally lowering the job, I guess, the workforce. So it's right. An easy transition to, oh, there's nobody, so AI must take it over.
Right. And then people are going to go, well, what am I supposed to do? How am I supposed to make a living? You're not. You'll be a ward of the state. That's where the total control comes in. That is precisely it. You'll be a useful idiot. The government will put you in whatever pigeonhole they want. And if you think I'm making this up, I want you to go back and look at some of the interviews that you and I have done together where we talk about this at length.
So the ramifications of this are just, it changes society completely.
Oh, it does. And it's supposed to, because you're supposed to have the case system, the CASTE system. Okay. That is something that we have seen failed regimes use throughout history for total control. Tyrannical totalitarianism. Think about former Russia. That's how they ran. Okay. That's why you had the peasants revolt, because they didn't want to live that way. And what happened? The peasants were dealt with, not in a very nice way either. We've seen this happen in other regimes as well. And now we're seeing this play out in America. And one of the things that is boosting this, and it's really interesting that it's come out about the same time, is all this hoorah about what's professional and what's not. And this is a new mission that our federal government has charted out called the Genesis Mission. Now, what is the Genesis Mission? It is a way for America to leverage its people and its taxpayer money to advance AI to the point of ad nauseum. Because we have to be number one in the world, Dr. Elena. We have to be number one in AI, which means we have to have more data centers. We have to take education and our healthcare, and we have to put it into AI hands, because after all, humans are so valuable and they take up carbon space that we just can't afford to have. And if you think I'm smoking dope, go look at the parameters for the Genesis Mission. It's supposed to be putting the economy above people yet again. How many times do we need to see, I don't care if it's a Republican-based administration or a Democratic-based administration, what we're seeing is economy is always being put before the people.
I don't understand how an economy is supposed to work without people. Who do you have to buy the products? Who do you have to run the, I mean, yes, you can have AI, I suppose, for certain things, but AI can't do everything. You need humans, and you need humans to be educated enough to be able to perform the job, correct?
Right. Absolutely, you do. And this is a dangerous game that we're playing, not just with our children, but the children who aren't even born yet. This is a dangerous game that's being played on us because, let's face it, while we're drawing breath, the government will find a way for us to be useful in some way.
I don't know what to say about this. I mean, I don't even know how we withdraw our consent for this, because this is happening in such an insidious way. And it's doing it in a way that's divide and conquer. There's no way that people aren't outraged that things that they've strived for and worked for are being told that it's not valuable or you can't access it. And it's kind of crazy. On the surface, I'm sure there are people going, well, nursing's not an issue. You know, it's not really a profession. You know, people, there's always people who are the lowest common denominator in terms of the way they think. Like they're going to get the piece of the pie that's being lost. It's somehow going to come to them. But in actuality, we all lose if this goes into play.
Well, it absolutely does. And one of the things about the Genesis mission is that it blatantly says, not only in the press release, but in the supposed fact sheet, that we're getting big business and big tech, and we're getting them in bed with the government yet one more time. Because after all, this is the new way of doing things. This is, don't you know, this is the golden era.
Yes, I've heard that many times. Ugh. I wonder for whom, though. Not for us.
Not for the general population. No. So how do we fight that? Well, first of all, you need to find out exactly what the Genesis mission is and what it's going to mean to your state. Do your state representatives and senators support this? And if so, why? And if they don't know much about it, then it's up to you as their constituent to let them know, hey, I've read this and I'm very concerned about what is being said, but not so much what's being said as to what else is not being said and how does that impact my family. Because unless you make it personal, they're not going to even listen. And sometimes when we do bring it up and it's personal, they're like, well, sorry, we got, you know, you're that unintended consequence. We need to stop accepting that. We need to stop accepting the status quo. We need to stop accepting that these leaders are leading us in a positive and wonderful direction.
Well, this is not only affecting, from what you just described from the initial part of the show, this is the pensions. This is people who have worked their entire lives who can actually lose everything that they've put in for. Nobody's safe. Everybody's going to be affected by this. And this, our economic system is teetering as it stands. You know, our show on the data centers is interesting because I guess I read an article that there's nobody working these data centers. I mean, that they were going to create jobs and there are maybe 60 people in them. So it's not like you're going to get a job in a data center necessarily, not that you'd want one, but there's not enough jobs that they're creating to
And the sales pitch for that is, oh yeah, we'll invest so much in your school so that we can train people especially for data centers. And then what happens? Well, the developer who built this stupid place, oh, well, we've got a private client and we can't tell you who it is, but they bring in their own workforce. So I'm sorry, we don't need your citizens. We have them filling their own jobs. That doesn't help your economy. It really does. It doesn't help your education system. But guess what? Because you bought into it, guess who now owns a piece of the pie, so to speak? It is absolutely off the charts. But this doesn't even go into the fact of, okay, we're talking about pensions and student loans and student debt. What happens to Social Security? What happens to the fact that you just had a multi-billionaire tech company donate, I don't know how much, to the federal government to create Trump accounts so that subsidized checks can now go out to every citizen to kind of sort of take the place of Social Security. Do you see what is happening?
I do.
But because it's under a Republican president and in a Republican administration, this is somehow all A-OK. Go look at Venezuela. Go look at Nazi Germany. Go look at any other of the subsidized regimes that pulled this kind of BS and see how long they lasted.
No, not very long, actually. And the people suffered, you know, horribly during these times that these societies existed.
Yes, but don't you know we're gearing up for our 250th anniversary as a nation? Oh, fabulous. This will be such a way to usher this in. We need to stop and remember that back in the late 1800s, America ceased being a nation and became an incorporated business, which is why we are in the pickle we are in.
I think people need to think about that. So let's take our last break and come back. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living a Solution. We're speaking with Ms. Lynn Taylor. And this is a sobering conversation, Lynn, because for the people who are actually now in debt because of student loans, or, right, you know, they've actually mortgaged their future with the mindset of, I'm going to put it out there, I'm going to get my profession, I'm going to be able to pay it back. What happens with people who are have outstanding hundreds of thousands, in some instances, of debt and no job to pay it back? What happens to those people? Is there any contingency? Is there loan forgiveness? Has that been talked about as a way to ease this, this catastrophe that's coming down the pipe? What contingency plans are there?
There have been some conversations about, okay, here is the level of student debt we have at this moment. And, oh, yes, we know that there are a lot of people who cannot pay their debt back. There has been some conversation on what we do because we have so many people who have existing student debt. They don't want necessarily to be in student debt. But again, because the things have gone the way they have gone and the federal government has taken over student loan repayments, interest rates are horrible. Job markets are terrible, but yet we're somehow going to get our money back. Well, what's going to end up happening, and this is kind of writing on the wall, there was a failed program that happened under the Obama administration that if you were able to pay your, let's say you had, you know, a massive amount of student debt, and you were faithful in your payments for like 10 years. Well, first of all, good luck and congratulations. You were able to make it 10 years with that, because that's almost impossible nowadays. But let's just labor under the assumption you've been faithful for 10 years and making all your student debt payments and blah, blah, blah. At the end of that 10 years, whatever was left of your student debt would be forgiven if, and only if, you agreed to go work for the federal government or who the federal government told you to go work for. Now, that program wasn't really popular, and I can remember the president getting on one of his addresses and going, I gave you a perfect solution. I don't know why you didn't use it and why you're not happy. That has been upcycled and recycled in a couple of different forms, and so I'm just waiting for this announcement to come back out and see how they dress this pig back up with some new lipstick, because it's going to come back some way, somehow. It has to, because that's the only way that some of these debts will be taken care of. But look at what cost. If it's not in the money, it's through literally a pound of flesh. Mm-hmm. This is a free country? Are you kidding me?
Something has to be done. This can't, I mean, the government is not sustainable. The economy is not sustainable.
No.
Are they trying to break the system so that you can go digital and what the China's doing
with the social credit system? Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's precise to the point. We can run the nation into a state of near ruin and supposedly reinvent it, and digital assets and bitcoins and a cyber existence are your fate.
Not
your God-given gift, but your fate. There's a big difference.
There's a huge difference, because there's nothing tangible or really of value. It's arbitrary.
It wow. absolutely is. But, you know, this is not the first show we've had this kind of a stark conversation, Dr. Elena. I just wonder how many listeners are actually going to, you know, stop the car or turn off the stove as they're listening or whatever and go, no, I cannot do this anymore. I cannot support this anymore. Then let's have those conversations about, okay, you've reached that point. You've reached the point of you can't take this anymore because you shouldn't have to. So let's start talking about what we do.
How would you start the process of slowing it down and getting on another path?
Well, first of all, you have to be informed and educated because you cannot go be a good citizen activist if you don't have the facts. Notice I did not say opinion. Opinions are about as good as a flat tire. They're not going to hold the mustard when it comes to dealing with these bureaucrats. You have to know the law. You have to know what the Constitution says. People are going to go, I don't have time for this. Well, you better make time because believe me, brothers and sisters, they're making time to be in your business. It's time that you're in theirs. So know what your Constitution says, both federal and state. Know what your laws say. Know that you do have recourse and then band together. Hold people accountable. I mean, these are the same steps we've gone over. I don't know how many times, Dr. Elena, they still work. They're still useful as long as we have some room to voice our, I'm not going to take this anymore. You know, let's be those people that have the fist in the air going, we're not going to take it.
I think you've just described one of the most important steps. It's we. I don't think we can depend on either side.
No.
Because if the other side is just as bad. Maybe it's all designed that the choice, the opposite choice is so onerous. Hope against hope that you're being led in a pathway that is going to be in your interest. Both ends are running down the same track with different rhetoric. And, you know, sometimes I don't listen to the news very much anymore, but it's so overwhelming that the natural inclination is to disengage because it's nothing, that feeling of, well, I can't do anything. That's what you're trying to get people to understand. We can do something.
We absolutely can. And first of all, I would turn off the news. That includes Fox because they're owned by the same corporate minions. If you're going to get your news, go straight to the source. Go look at congress.gov. Go look at the legislation. That's what I do. Yes, we need some of these news sources to get some information. I'm not going to argue that. But we shouldn't be so sold out in trusting media that is being used to manipulate. Why do you think there are images out there that are saying, oh, Trump just signed an executive order saying that nursing means nothing? No, there was no executive order that was signed. It was language used by a Department of Education that said that, not an executive order. But if I run with the first one, I can go out there and I can spread fear. And what do I accomplish when I spread fear?
Everybody just cows.
They do. You know, they accept it. They're willing to accept it. But if I come out here and I show you, no, there was no executive order. Here was where the rubber really is as far as meeting the road. Then you're going to feel empowered. And that's the point.
Yeah. And that's the one that they don't want you to have. You know, knowledge, as you said, and I will reiterate, knowledge is power. And we're the government. The government's supposed to work for us.
Absolutely.
And that means from the local level on up.
Absolutely. And so, you know, start local. Hey, did you know about whatever it is that's on your mind? Are you concerned about what's going on? Hey, Mr. Mayor or Mrs. Mayor, what do you think about blah, blah, blah? Get in conversation with their people, too. Yeah, they may have some title in front of them, but are they using it to listen to their constituents, or are they using it like we're seeing from the federal government, which is we're just going to rule by mayhem?
It is absolute mayhem. I would agree. From the top down, whether it's a legislative branch who's not following any kind of law. I mean, yeah, this chaos, it seems to be planned, in my opinion.
Well, it absolutely is. It's what's known as a kangaroo court. But let's think about this. You have an executive branch that for decades has used executive orders as national laws when that's not their purpose whatsoever. Mm-hmm. It's not de facto rule, but that's how it's been treated. You have a Congress that is passing laws that are absolutely unconstitutional, yet no one's holding them in check. And you have a Supreme Court making decisions in jurisdictions that were never assigned to them. And you know what? I'm not a professional politician, and I can call all this out. You want to know why? Because I'm an informed citizen, and guess what? You can be one too. And if you don't like the future that's planned for you, then get off your butt and do something about it.
The tax cut bill for school choice, what is that?
It's another shuck and jive because guess what? Oh, we're going to cut your taxes by offering you school choice money. You really are? No. You're going to cut taxes in one area and add those taxes back in another area to prop up what school choice that is what federally funded. Oh, do you see? It's an oxymoron of a bill. So it doesn't really, I mean, it needs to be talked about, Dr. Elena, but not as a solution because it is not a solution. It's a circular, it's a hamster wheel. Yeah, we're going to use a title, tax cut. Oh, yes, they're cutting my taxes. Because think about when income tax, well, first of all, there shouldn't be an income tax. But when it was first proposed, it was supposed to be a temporary measure, and it was at 3%. At last check, I think it's somewhere anywhere between 30 and 50%.
It went from 3% to almost 50%? That's crazy.
Oh, and then we tax you when you die. We tax you when you're born. We tax you when you sell your house. We tax you when you go to school. But we're free people.
If there's one take-home message for folks, what would that be?
Well, without being too cheeky, first of all, I would say hug your children, kiss your spouse. And if you don't have a spouse or children, then hug your dog. If you don't have a dog, hug yourself. My point is, embrace the loved ones around you. Start talking about these hard subjects with them, because if you don't, and it comes time to protect them, how are they going to know that you've got their back or that they have your back? There's safety in numbers. That's something my dad always told me. And I was like, oh, Lord, here he goes again. Safety in numbers, blah, 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 blah. But I get it now. I got it way earlier. But, I mean, this is where it really applies. There's safety in numbers. When you go to speak up, don't go by yourself. When you go to investigate, don't go by yourself. When you go to stand up or speak out, don't go by yourself.
I think that's excellent advice. In the short time we have, Lynn, how can people reach you, read what you write, have you speak for them?
Okay, my website is commoncorediva.com. If you wish to financially bless any of the advocacy or research or any of the things that I do have a donate button there on the page. It's www.commoncorediva.com. If you wish to schedule me to speak, have me come to your group and speak, you can email me at info@commoncorediva.com. I have a speaking engagement in West Virginia in January. We're going to be talking about data centers and the dangers that go there. But I can speak on any subject that intersects with education. And people are going to say, well, how do data centers intersect with education? Well, we covered it just a little bit by the supposedly skill-based training, but also in the fact that the education data goes through those data centers. So is your data really protected? So any subject that butts up to education, including politics, is something I can speak to.
Well, it's all connected, isn't it?
Yes, ma'am, it certainly is. How well you and I know, as proof of our many shows, especially when healthcare and education come together.
Well, you only have your health, you have God, you have your family, and they're all under attack at this point.
I'm
sorry. Go ahead.
No. I was just going to say, you're absolutely right. That's all we have, but that's more than enough.
I would agree. Lynn, thank you so much for joining me today. It's been just an absolute pleasure as usual speaking with you. And another call to action, people need to step up to the plate because we don't have a lot of time left, it looks like. But what we have, we need to take advantage and work together to fix this. So, Lynn, thank you so much for joining me, and I can't wait to have you back on.
Thank you, Dr. Elena.
Thank you, Lynn, and thank you, everybody, for living in the solution.
Revolutionary Talk for Revolutionary Times. Liberty Talk FM.